on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5 Live.
This is 5 Live Friday afternoon. Reviews coming up before 4. A Mighty Heart, As You Like It, Clubland, Death Proof, and also Now I Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
No, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. It's a very famous phrase. People use it at weddings. I now pronounce
and
you.
And I now pronounce you. What, Chuck and Larry, what do I say?
You now said, I pronounce you.
Oh, it's not far off.
No, it's like saying to be or to be not. It's like, you know, no, it's not far wrong, but it's not like right.
Box office top 10 this week. At 10, it's The Simpsons Movie, funnier in the first half.
Yeah, it is funny in the first half. It is funny, however. I mean, I took my kids to see it, and they laughed all the way through it. They laughed at different things. They laughed, basically, at, you know, The Simpsons hitting themselves in the head with hammers and that sort of stuff, which I have to confess is funny.
1408 at 9. Now, have you seen this
No,
yet?
Still haven't. I tell you, because there's so much stuff out this week. I've had a really, you know...
Tough week.
No, of course it's not tough. I'm a movie critic. Cinema. How hard can it be? Although every now and then there's an Adam Sandler movie out, so, you know, it can be tough. No, I haven't seen it. Still looking forward to it.
So that's 1408 at 9. It's The 3:10 to Yuma at number 8.
And it's not Unforgiven. And can please everybody else, referring to Unforgiven, call it Unforgiven, not The Unforgiven. The Unforgiven is a different film. Unforgiven is the Clint Eastwood movie, which this is not.
And what happens in The Unforgiven?
Well, it doesn't happen the same as in Unforgiven.
Is that a...
It's a completely different film. It's a film of no connection whatsoever. Two different films. One with a definite article, one without a definite article. I don't know what they do in France, because in France you can't lose a definite article. So presumably both films in France are called L'Unforgiven.
We need to check that out, really, don't
yes,
we?
If there is somebody listening in France...
Or just someone who knows French...
Yeah,
maybe.
Or has access to the internet and the Google function. Let us know what Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven was called in French. I bet it is... What's forgiven in...
I don't know what...
Non but de trespass par de par.
Pardonné.
Yes, le non pardon.
It all will be explained with an entertaining email, which will arrive in the next 5 minutes. mayo@bbc.co.uk. Shoot him up at 7.
It's just more of the same. It thinks it's incredibly postmodern and cine-literate, and it's not. It's quite grisly and quite long, even though it's actually a short, snappy movie. It feels quite long. And I wish Clive Owen wouldn't waste his time with this sort of thing.
Knocked Up, this week's number 6.
And again, still not there. And I have to say, there's a big fight going on there, because I said all this stuff about Superbad, which we'll get to. But because Knocked Up is kind of connected to Superbad, because of what I felt about Superbad, I need to go and see Knocked Up. I know I haven't seen it. It may be a masterpiece. Of course it may be a masterpiece. And I'm not going to rely on Joe Queenan for my opinion. Thank you very much. He hates Forrest Gump. But I'm really not looking forward to it.
It is funny.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it.
Oh, yeah. Is it funny?
Yeah, it is funny. It's... I think that the most interesting thing is, because it still is in that tradition of Porky's, but it's, I would imagine that, I think, women will like it as much as men.
Did you go and see it at a paying cinema?
No, I saw it because the director and the star were coming into the building.
Oh, I see. Sorry, no, I just thought you had an evening free and you said, you know, what should we do tonight? Let's go and see Knocked Up.
No, I went out for the professional reasons.
Oh, okay.
We have Disturbia at number 5.
Which isn't as disturbing as it ought to be. It starts off quite nicely. The idea is, you know, it's sort of the Hitchcockian idea that he's trapped in the house. He's trapped in the house because he's tagged on his ankle. And that works for about 50 minutes. Then after about the first hour, it decides that it has to throw in its hand about whether the guy next door is really a psycho. And then when it does that, it's like, oh, it's that film.
The Bourne Ultimatum at number 4.
I mean, the love for Paul Greengrass really just knows no bounds. He's a great director, and he's really done incredible stuff with this series. And, you know, it's worth pointing out, because actually we keep overlooking it, that Joan Allen is really great in those films and lends real class to them. And who knew that Matt Damon would be that good? What are you doing? Why are you doing this?
I'm sending signals.
Okay.
It's all right. Actually, which I just realised would have been caught up on the live stream.
I know, that's what I was just wondering. Are you sort of signalling to powers that be?
Yes, that's exactly what I was doing. Atonement at number 3.
He's very good. She's Keira Knightley. It doesn't quite work as a film, but it has an ambitious bash at the novel.
Unforgiven in French.
Yes, it is.
Is The Unforgiven or Unforgiven? I think this is Unforgiven.
Unforgiven, the Clint Eastwood movie, Unforgiven.
Was called Impitoyable.
But not Le Impitoyable.
No, not
Le. Oh, well, there we go.
Impitoyable. Impitoyable.
In that case, part 2 of this. What's the film The Unforgiven called in France? Answers on a postcard as soon as possible, please.
Who directed that? Do you know anything about it?
I don't know. I just know it's not
Unforgiven. When did it
come out? No idea. It's just not
Black and white or colour? American, French?
American.
Who's in it?
Don't know.
Why not?
because I'm not interested. Because
you know,
not
it's not exactly
film.
The same. It might be exactly the same.
Oh,
if
fine.
You don't
okay,
know
great. Sorry, yes, Simon. It might be exactly the same film. You're quite right. It might be exactly the same film. But you know what? It isn't.
It might be L apostrophe and patois.
Yes, that's why I'm asking.
L'impatoyable. But we'll check it. But you
you're being particularly difficult.
But you
this
say
afternoon.
That every week. Super bad at number two.
And so I had a message from a very good person I really respect, David Cox, whose opinion on films I respect enormously, who literally went to the trouble of sending me an email to say, "Dear Mark, haven't spoken for ages. You are so wrong about Superbad. I want to ring you up and have this fight in public, but you are so wrong." And I had to send him back an email going, "No, I'm not. It's rubbish."
That's an art to send a patronising email.
No, I can manage it, really. I did it in that tone as well. There's a special type font, which is, type font? Type font, yeah, type font.
I know what you mean.
Patronising type font.
There but, should be one, shouldn't there?
It really...
Capital letters is shouting. There should be a patronising type
There should
font.
Be, yes, And but it's I am befuddled by the amount of intelligent people whose opinion I respect who've been taken in by the Superbad thing.
Couldn't be that you're wrong, could it?
No, it couldn't. And David is very rarely wrong about things, but he really is wrong now.
The UK's number one is Run, Fat Boy Run.
It's the... At last! The film comedy of the year. Fantastic. And it's only September. Well, really, I can stop holding my breath now. And so let's say hello to whatever that guy's name is, which I can't remember now.
Simon Pegg?
No.
David Schwimmer?
No, the guy who wrote the quote on the poster, whose name completely fails me. Who said it was, the...
Who cares?
Perfect. I think prefect is the word
was
he
it,
meant.
Was it Bob Johnson?
Bob Johnson. No, it was Dick Schneebly.
That'll be him. That's the box office top 10. We'll do some new releases in just a moment. The email's mayo@bbc.co.uk. You can text 85058. Don't forget the podcast is available in case you miss us any Friday. Hello to Jason Isaacs and Dave Morrissey. A number of people saying, I listen regularly from all parts of the world. Can you say hello to me? But these emails are not from A-list movie stars.
No, that's really that's the big thing. It was like there was the thing Stephen Fry did at the last BAFTAs that he hosted. I thought he was rather good at the BAFTAs. He said this thing about to present one award, somebody had to I asked people to say, I think I should present this award because. And he said, in the winning entry, he said, I think I should present this award because I am Matt Dillon.
Which is good enough.
Which is very funny. At least it was funny when he did it, obviously.
A number of people saying, how can I watch this live stream? You go to the 5Live homepage and all the instructions are there.
But don't, as many people have done, write in on the webpage saying, don't Mark and Simon look bored between the things. But it's not that we're bored, it's that when other things are going on, we have to be quiet. It's like a library. Otherwise, if we talk or do anything... It's like, what are we meant to do? And the news guy going,
yeah, what am I? Actually, I'm going to have to bring things in to do you're doing the review, which will then put you off and also appear very rude. So I will sit motionless for A Mighty Heart.
Okay, so Michael Winterbottom's film about the abduction of journalist Daniel Pearl in Karachi in January 2002, a very, very difficult subject, obviously, based on a book by Daniel Pearl's wife, Marianne, who was pregnant during this whole horrible business, and it's all seen unfolding through her eyes. It's one of those cases in which, because I think pretty much everybody knows the story, remembers the story, because it is very, very recent history.
She also came in on the programme and talked about her book.
Marianne Pearl did.
Yeah.
Well, it's because there is so much invested in the real life story, it's very difficult to separate your feelings about the real life story from the film. But I think it's important to try just to analyse the film itself. The thing that I have to confess that I had a problem with when I first heard about this film was I knew that central role was going to be played by Angelina Jolie. And Angelina Jolie is very changeable. I mean, there are times when she's good, but when she's bad, she's very bad. And she spends an awful lot of time, being the great celebrity couple of Angelina thing. And I thought that was going to be a real problem. Anyway, here is a clip of her as Marianne Pearl speaking on the television in the middle of this hideous saga.
I have a message, three different points I want to talk about. The first one is that I want to remind them that my husband and I are both journalists. We are two people who met and fell in love because we have the same ideal. He's someone who, I never saw him say a lie. In his journalism, I've never seen anyone so honest.
And how are you coping with this?
I haven't slept for 6 days, if that's what you're asking. But I have hope. I am not desperate because I believe that if I stop trying to create, this dialogue, then I stop believing in everything else. And I can't do that. I'm pregnant.
And if you could say one thing to your husband now, what would you tell him?
I love you.
Now, I've seen the film a couple of times now, and actually every moment when it gets to that point when she says, I love you, I think it's fabulously well done. Even with the enormous baggage of prejudice that I bring to, you know, the starring role of Angelina Jolie, I think the great credit of this film is 10 minutes in, I just completely forget that it's her. It's directed by Michael Winterbottom, who is just about the most eclectic filmmaker currently working in Britain. When you think about his CV, he's done, you know, a very, very dreary adaptation of Jude the Obscure, which I didn't like. He's done the incredible sort of pop picture of 24-Hour Party People, which I absolutely love. He did, you know, the sort of the art porn of Nine Songs, which is incredibly sort of self-indulgent. The politics of In This World. I mean, it's like no two Michael Winterbottom films are the same, and he's incredibly prolific, and he works and works and works, and he has a bash at everything, and when he hits it, he's really something. The thing about this film is it has a real sense of location. You feel that you are in that city. You also feel that you're there in that apartment in which all these warring factions are all blaming each other and fighting against each other in order to, you know, to sort of pass the blame for this terrible thing that's happening. And at the middle of it is this great calm, this calm which is completely embodied by the Marianne character. Of course, I went in thinking that the title of Mighty Heart refers to Daniel Pearl. I think actually you come out of it thinking it doesn't refer to him, it refers to her. I think Jolie's performance is really something. I think that, you know, if it is, I mean, it seems to be very, very close to the truth of that character, in which case you come out with nothing but admiration. And one question I kept being asked was, you know, what's the point of doing this? It's such a tragic story, such a horrible ending. What's the point of the story? Well, actually, amazingly, you come out of it. And I mean, literally both times it has run me over like a steamroller. It's such an emotional thing. But you do come out of it thinking there is real strength in the human spirit. There is real, you know, ability and dignity to rise above these things. You think with both of these people, they both embody something that is really worth celebrating. I'm not talking about celebrating in a you know, TV movie of the week way. I mean, genuine celebration of the human spirit in the most appalling circumstances. And as I said, the two great things I can say about it is, firstly, I just forget that it's her, and I would be very surprised if she doesn't, you know, if it's not an awards courting performance, but it doesn't feel like that. I mean, I think she deserves awards for it, but it doesn't feel like give me an award at all. You just don't think it's her. And the other thing is, Michael Winterbottom, you know, I mean, he really, every time he does something, he doesn't know where he's coming from, where he's going to. He is a real force of nature, and it is, you know, an extraordinary piece of work.
My only contribution to that would be that's very much the impression that she gave when she came in to talk about her book. She was quite extraordinary.
Sure.
So clearly, Angelina Jolie has captured
she really
something
has.
Of her.
And there's a moment in it in which she's asked in the film a very inappropriate question by a newsman. And when the film played in Cannes, in the press conference after the film, Marianne Pearl was there, and the guy, the newsman played in the film, stood up and said, "I am that guy, and I just want to apologise."
Right.
I mean, it's a very fine piece of work, and it really isn't TV movie of the week, which I think is the risk that you always run with addressing recent history in that way. It's a very, very fine piece of work.
It's 3:26. This is Five Live. Let's go back to Jonathan Over, and Tim Hemmons won the first set. Jonathan.
He wouldn't have expected to have played here, but Hemmons dealing with him at the moment, leading by one set to love.
Jonathan, thank you. 3:27. So we've established that Unforgiven in French was called Impatoyable.
Yes, and it'll be La
No, L'Impatoyable. It was actually a movie with Jackie Chan.
Oh, really?
And The Unforgiven, John Huston's 1960 film with Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah, which is not, obviously, the Clint Eastwood movie.
Clearly not.
Q, and if you will, E.D.
Le Vent de la Plaine.
Le Vent de la Plaine. The air of the
Wind on the Plain.
No, just
you
heard
see,
a voice
no, but
there.
That's right, yeah. But that's like the thing about that in Japan, you know, A Star is Born is called The Bitter Tears of Little Singing Girl, and, you know, or in Holland, that film with Jesse Birdsall called Getting It Right is called At Least I've Still Got My Vespa.
That makes perfect sense.
It does.
I think so. All that is now sorted.
Can I do a quick review?
Is there such a thing?
Well, there is, yes. As You Like It.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so it's the new Kenneth Branagh
Ken.
Film. Yeah, R. Ken. And he was, did he come on the programme?
He did, and he was most entertaining.
I'm a big fan of Kenneth Branagh. I used to really, really have a downer on Kenneth Branagh. I hated Dead Again. I thought it was absolutely terrible, dreadful again, blah, 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 blah. Couldn't be doing with him at all. And then, you know, as so often happens nowadays, I realised that I was wrong, and I reassessed things.
It's so good every time you say it.
I know, but it's becoming more and more common. I'm sorry, as I'm drifting toward middle age. Well, old age, actually, in my case. So Branagh has done some really brilliant Shakespeare. Primarily, his adaptation of Hamlet, which is an extraordinary piece of work, really makes that text accessible to all audiences. And when, in our younger years, when we were at Radio 1, it was the Radio 1 Movie of the Month. It was very important because it's a film that does work for teenagers. Hamlet does work for teenagers. I mean, actually, of course, it's here. The hero in Hamlet is a young hero anyway. That's why people like Mel Gibson and you know will always want to do it, because it's got that young rebel thing. If there were motorbikes around, I'm sure there's a Hamlet with motorbikes. But Branagh's Hamlet is brilliant. Obviously, the Henry V, Love, Labour's Lost, which is kind of okay, Much Ado, which is great and romping. So now, As You Like It. Well, several problems with this. First is As You Like It, As You Don't Like It. You know, me no liker. Sorry, can't do anything about it. Don't like the original Shakespearean text. Don't think it's funny. Don't get the sex change thing. Because it's one of those Shakespeare plays in which there's a dramatic convention. Somebody's a girl, decides to be a man, puts on a hat, nobody recognises her. Fine. I mean, I know it works for Superman. Sorry, what can you say? It just doesn't work for me. It works on theatre. Works when you're doing it on stage. If you do it in the cinema, I think you have to do something more than get Bryce Dallas Howard to put a hat on. Really, because it's still Bryce Dallas Howard. She got a hat on. I mean, I'm sorry, it's not a man, and she doesn't sound like a man, she doesn't look like a man. So problem number one. Problem number two, comedy not funny. Problem number three, it's got the Seven Ages of Man speech in it, but it hasn't got a whole bunch else, apart from a lot of sort of, you know, intertwined knots and sort of, you know, nonsensical oodly-poodly. I mean, it's not one of Shakey's best ones.
When you say not one of Shakey's favourites, I instantly thought of This Old House.
Yes.
See, now that... Which was, it takes us into a whole different territory, doesn't it? I'm sorry I had that thought, really.
No, well, I think actually I'd rather listen to Shakin' Stevens doing This Old House than watch As You Like It. The other thing is, fine, and again, look, in Kenneth Branagh's defence, I'm sure it's a... You know, it's a very heartfelt bash at the text. And I'm kind of quite glad that he's working his way through the canon, because people are going to be studying these films, these texts, and it's nice to have a decent version of it. But the woodland setting, it's transposed to Japan, right? 19th yes. century Japan. One of the problems with the Japanese setting is it just kept reminding me how good the Kurosawa Shakespeare adaptations like Ran and Throne of Blood are.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Well, I'm sure you were.
Yeah.
And what are their adaptations of, Simon, Ran and Throne of Blood?
I think it's Greece, isn't it?
Greece?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen them.
No, okay.
I was hoping it was just a passing reference. You'd nod and move on.
Fine. Should we go back to Buñuel, as we did before?
Oh, yes. The box Fine. Set. I'm working my way through
You are. And how are you managing with it? Have you got from past Shan Andalou in the eye slicing yet?
No, I'm yet to get to that.
Have you?
I think that's on chapter 10.
Fine. Okay.
I'm not there yet.
But, and... So, you know, generally, I mean, I have to say, and I'm sorry to say this, because I do like Kenneth Branagh, and I admire him, and I'm looking forward to Sleuth and all the rest of
Titus
it.
Titus Andronicus.
If Kenneth Branagh took Titus Andronicus on, I would be thrilled. That'd be great. Fantastic. You know, because Polanski's Macbeth, Kenneth Branagh's Titus Andronicus. As You Like It. Sorry.
Apparently, Greece in Venezuela, by the way, was called Vaseline. Just thought I'd mention that. Which is not bad. And the Reverend Tim Heaney in Dursley says, could you tell the good doctor that in the Church of England we no longer pronounce a couple man and wife, but husband and wife?
Well, what did I say?
We were making reference to Chuck and Larry, and you, whatever it's called, and you said, you know, it's a very famous phrase, I pronounce you man and wife.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. Yeah.
The Reverend Tim says husband and wife. He's just being...
No, pedantic. Thank you very much, Reverend Tim, for pointing that out. I mean, the thing I was complaining about with Simon wasn't the man and wife or the husband and wife. It was the I now pronounce you and I pronounce you now. It was the arrange these words in order to make a
but
famous
in general,
sentence. But no, you're quite right. But then again, I'm old. I'm old school. I still do the Lord's Prayer that way round, as opposed to the new version, which is all grammatically sorted out.
We've moved on to into a completely different territory.
No, but you know that. Like now, it's all written out. You know, it's not, leaders not all that stuff. It's all sort of written out as if somebody said, here's a famous prayer, write it out in modern English.
Right.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
You're a 1662 man at heart.
I am, excellent. Yes. I'll be nailing things to a door very soon.
So 1408, can't do that. 1662.
That's the thing.
It's 3:32. This is 5 Live. Got a good joke for you here. Well, it's... Okay. Tom in Plymouth.
Yeah.
Why should you never go on a picnic with Kenneth Branagh?
I don't know.
He always takes the best roles for himself.
Very good. Very good.
Although not in this film, actually.
No, he did. No, in this film, he's solidly behind the camera.
And Brian Blessed gets most of the fun.
Brian Blessed twice as the Duke and his brother. Oh, ho, ho, ho! He's like Noddy Holder.
That's
it's Christmas.
You
I know that's
no
what Brian Blessed
for
does.
Employing him if he don't do anything other than that.
And on the subject of gripes about the updating of Lord's Prayer, it's the trespasses bit. It's because it's now, and forgive us our sins. No, the word's trespasses. And it's all, you know, for thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory. It's for the kingdom, the power and the glory are thine. It's like, can we just have it the way it was?
It's just based on the premise. What are we talking about the prayer book for? But it's based on the premise that no one uses words like trespass for meaning sin. In fact, no one used the word sin.
No, sinners will be prosecuted. That's what I want to see. I want to see on fields signs that say sinners will be prosecuted.
What else is new, Mr. Kermode, sir?
Death Proof, or let's call it Grindhouse and a Half. Quentin Tarantino's homage to the Grindhouse oeuvre, except, of course, it isn't. Because what happened was it was originally made as two films, one film, Quentin Tarantino's bit, then Robert Rodriguez's bit, Planet Terror, and then some trailers in the middle for films that don't exist, all put together to form one long homage to Grindhouse cinema. Released it in America, everyone went, what's all that about? What is all that about? They watched the first bit, which was Quentin Tarantino's bit, and thought, it's over, I'm going home, boring. So then Quentin Tarantino went, oh, no, sorry, no, actually, let's split the two things up. Let's get rid of the Robert Rodriguez thing. Actually, my film, Death Proof, is not meant to be an 89-minute throw. It's meant to be 2 hours long, and I'm going to premiere it at Cannes. Le Cannes, Le Festival du Cannes. It is un film de Quentin Tarantino. So he did all 2 hours of Death Proof at Cannes. So, firstly, it's half of the film it was meant to be in the first place. It's all scratchy and jumpy in the style of grindhouse cinema that, incidentally, most of us are kind of quite bored with, Quentin. You know, we watched a lot of grindhouse cinema when we were young.
Did
and
we?
Well, I did.
What was the grindhouse cinema we watched when we were young?
Well, I mean, it's all those exploitation movies. It's like things like Last House on the Left and those sort of movies. And, you know, that's where the... And ages ago, when I said grindhouse, everyone said, what does that mean? And now, of course, now that Quentin Tarantino's used it, not allowed to use it. Anyway... It says on the posters, and I love this, the fifth film by Quentin Tarantino. Well, I'm sorry, the fifth film. Like, I love the way he does this revision. It says the fifth film. No, hang on, Quentin Tarantino, right? It's not the fifth film. It's half a film, for a start. It's only the fifth film if you don't count Four Rooms, which you are trying to write out of history in your Stalinist way. I mean, and you don't count From Dusk Till Dawn, which you wrote and starred in. I mean, at the very best, it's the sixth and a half film from Quentin Tarantino. And at worst, it's at least the eighth and three quarters. It's not the fifth film. I mean, Kill Bill was two films. Sorry, Quentin, say what you like, was two films.
I don't care.
Do you know how we know? We paid twice. Anyway...
Having established that it's the eighth and three-quarters film...
The plot, and I use the word loosely, stuntman Mike, played by Kurt Russell, after several other people had turned the role down, including Mickey Rourke.
Heavens.
It's a role that Mickey Rourke turned down. Open the door so
down.
The whiff can leave the room. You know, even Mickey Rourke said, you know, Quentin, not going to... Although I think he did start, and then they fell out. Maybe Quentin said something about his face or... Anyway,
but
fine.
Kurt has done some decent film in the
He's
past.
Done some bad films as well. I mean, ever since Escape from L.A. in which he went surfing down...
That was terrible.
Yeah, that was really, really bad. So he's a stuntman and he picks women up in his car and he kills them. That's the plot. That's the whole plot. Here's a clip of him picking somebody up in a bar.
When I do, you will be the first to know.
Will you be able to drive later?
I know looks can be deceiving. But I'm a teetotaler. I've been drinking club soda and lime all night, and now I'm building up to my big drink.
Which is what?
Virgin piña colada.
Okay. Why would someone who doesn't drink spend hours at a bar drinking water?
You know, a bar offers all kind of things other than alcohol.
Hmm. Really? Like what?
Women. Nacho grande platters. The fellowship of some fascinating individuals like Warren here. Alcohol is just a lubricant for all the individual encounters that a barroom offers.
Ooh, is that cowboy wisdom?
I'm not a cowboy, Pam. I'm a stuntman. But that's a very easy mistake to make.
And it goes on like that for hours. Now... Several points to that. Firstly, it's a very badly written film. Everyone in this film talks like Quentin Tarantino. He says, oh, it's about a group of women. A group of women who talk like Quentin Tarantino. Everyone in the film talks like Quentin Tarantino, except Quentin Tarantino. Because when he turns up, his staggeringly bad acting means that he can't actually deliver lines in the style of Quentin Tarantino. And it is absolutely demonstration that he has only got one voice. He has one, all his characters are the same person. They're all him. Don't matter whether they're male, female, it doesn't make any difference. They are all Quentin Tarantino. Point one. Point number two, this whole thing about the scratchy film format, the jumpy stock, it jumps around, it looks like a 70s grindhouse movie, except it doesn't. It runs out of steam halfway through, and he kind of gives up that idea, as he has done by cutting the movie in half and saying, well, we're not going to have it as grindhouse, I'm going to get rid of Planet Terror, which I have yet to see, but sounds, if anything, worse. So it's a really half-witted idea. At the beginning of Kill Bill, oh, a Shaw Brothers presentation. Oh, that's so funny, Quentin, because we all remember seeing Kung Fu movies back, you know, back in the 1970s, and they were Shaw Brothers movies. And you've stolen the logo. That's absolutely fantastic. You know, with this, you're right, back in the 1970s, movies were scratchy, and there you are, you've scratched the film up. Point three, it's a film which has got two major...
How many points are there?
Just no, a... four.
Okay.
Two major riffs. One
just
of them is
planning my afternoon.
One of them is on Vanishing Point. The whole of the second half is a long riff on Vanishing Point, which I like. I like Vanishing Point with, you know, some reservations. I like it. I'm not going to obsess about it, but I like it. But more importantly, it's a whole section of this film in which they play the theme music from Cruising, right? I love Cruising. I love Cruising. William Friedkin film. Al Pacino goes undercover in the gay heavy leather S&M scene in New York. You know,
that's
sign me
you
up
to a T.
That is. I love that film. I think it's brilliant. They played it in Cannes in a restored print, you know, with all the filth put back in again. And Friedkin was there introducing them. I'm in heaven, right? It's the new print of Cruising. Friedkin's there. And Friedkin says, I must say hello, incidentally, because in the audience is a great young filmmaker, Quentin Tarantino. I'll give him a round of applause. And everyone said, I'm sorry, I'm going to sit on my hands. I'm not having this. You may be William Friedkin. You made The Exorcist, The French Connection, and Cruising. I am not applauding your new best friend just because he used the theme music from Cruising in his film. I'm sorry, it's not going to work on me. Worse, however, point four.
Ah, this is four.
And
right.
This is it. And this is the
point.
The defense of all of this infantile, adolescent nonsense is he's a fan. Quentin's a fan. No, he's not. And I'm sorry, Your Honour. Gavel bashing time. Here's how it goes. You look at Tarantino's career. Reservoir Dogs, Calling Card Movie, Pulp Fiction, bits of other movies like for all the rest of it. Blah, 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 Four Rooms. Let's try and forget it. Let's write it out of Stalinist history. But then he makes Jackie Brown. Jackie Brown is a film that proves that he can make films with proper characters and proper story and proper difference between male and female. And it's actually something else. And you know what? It financially flops. And he goes, oh no, I didn't make any money out of Jackie Brown. I'd better go back to doing that infantile adolescent claptrap that I made my name with before. So Kill Bill Part 1, Kill Bill Part 2, Grindhouse turning into Death Proof. This is not the work of a fan. It is the work of a man who is sold out. And the quicker everyone realises that what Quentin Tarantino has turned into is your embarrassing uncle who turns up at a wedding in a leather jacket and tells you how swinging he was back in the 90s. He's that guy. He's not a fan. He's a money-grubbing sellout who can't write, can't direct, and has run out of ideas. And the worst thing about it is that in the middle of that CV is Jackie Brown, which proves how good he could be and just how bad he is now. I rest my case.
And on the plus side?
Well, I like the theme from Cruising, you know, but just I like it in Cruising.
And that's it.
Pretty much.
We'll do some more in a moment. 12 minutes to four. Mr. Duncalf, sir, what do you have?
Cruising might be a good film, but Al Pacino's got a permanent...
We talk about movie titles being translated. This is because of Unforgiven not being the same as The Unforgiven. So it's Impatoyable and L'Impatoyable, which is a Jackie Chan movie, as opposed to The Unforgiven, which is Le Vent de la Plaine, etc. And we did the thing about movie translations. Greece and Venezuela was Vaseline and so on, which I still think is very
funny. It is funny, yeah.
Paul in Welshpool says, in our house, Norbit was translated as I would rather put my privates into an old-style meat mincer. Which would have worked just as well, I think. and funnier than Norbit, when you think about it. It's 10 to 4. We'll do some more reviews. What else is new, Doctor?
I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
Dick and Jane.
Yes.
Is that how it goes?
No, it isn't. Okay, so, it's the new Adam Sandler movie, and I...
Say that with enthusiasm. A lot of people look forward to an Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that strange? I mean, okay, look... Adam Sandler is a very, very successful comedian. He also has a kind of, I mean, I say in the financial sense, he also has a sort of successful acting career. And he seems to balance, you know, if he ever does anything that's sort of serious acting, then he has to do something that's sort of Dumbo to counterbalance it. So immediately after Punch Drunk Love, which is brilliant, he did Eight Crazy Days, Eight Crazy Nights. He executive produced that. And then he did some, you know, more of the kind of the Little Nicky style stuff. So he just did Rain Army recently, that post 9/11 New York movie with him and Don Cheadle, and not doing a bad English accent for once, which is a real pleasure. So now he has to go back to, you know, the nuts and bolts stuff. So he does I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, and Chuck and Larry is one of those Dumbo lowest common denominator comedies, made worse by the fact that it attempts to aspire toward the moral high ground on several levels. The deal, the setup is, it's about two firemen. Now, you have to begin by understanding that nowadays, to put firemen in movies is to deal with a very sacred cow, because ever since 9-11, I mean, obviously before 9-11, to some extent, there were films like that, Richie Cunningham,
Well, it's Backdraft.
Ron Howard film.
Backdraft.
Backdraft,
is the only thing I can think of.
No, that's it. The Ron Howard film Backdraft. I call him Richie Cunningham, perhaps his character in Happy Days. He, of course, is Bryce Dallas Howard's father, and we like him very much, and he directed Apollo 13. He made Backdraft long before that, but since 9/11, there's been all these movies in which the heroism of firemen is, on the one hand, celebrated, on the other hand, it's sometimes used to justify some very bad movies on the grounds that you can't take against this because it's about firemen. You can't any longer have anything but good feelings about firemen. So, two firemen. At the beginning of it, one of them is bereaved. He's worried that if he should pass on, his estate won't go to his children. He's got a pension problem. He comes up with a novel way of solving it and goes to see his friend Adam Sandler, who is a very macho kind of guy. Here's the plot exposition clip.
What time is it?
4 o'clock. I saved your life, and you said you owed me. You remember that?
Yeah, you saved my life, then you got me out of bed at 4 a.m. We're even. That's great.
Hey, look, I'm just going to throw something out here, and it's going to sound a little bit crazy.
You're getting a breast reduction.
No, shut up. No, look, I figured out how to solve this pension problem, and I don't have to quit the department.
Great. How?
What we're going to do is we're going to set things up so that you inherit my benefits if I die. That way, you'll be the one responsible for Eric and Tori.
Absolutely. That's a great idea. How do we do that?
Yeah. Domestic partnership.
Domestic partnership.
See? The gag is they're going to pretend to be gay to get married. So, therefore, that will solve the problem that's set up at the beginning of the film. So, for the rest of the film, these two actors are going to pretend to be gay. And this is another moral high ground thing, because what's going to happen is these macho boars are going to learn that actually, you know, it's quite hard to pretend to be gay because people use horrible words like, you know, faggot. And they learn that that's not good. And they learn a bunch of other stuff in there. So the narrative is saying, hey, it's great. You know, we are glad to be gay. It's great. Except we're not. Except we're really not. Except at every possible opportunity, can we just reinforce just how heterosexual Adam Sandler is by, at the beginning, having him bedding a series of women who appear to have just walked out of the local Ann Summers shop, and all the way through have any possibility of intimacy with his other half, except for what I now see is referred to as bromance. Bromance. You know, it's male bonding, but bromance. We look forward to that word.
No, that word doesn't have to exist anymore.
No, it really doesn't, does it?
It doesn't work either.
But, you know, actually, there is an interest. Somewhere in the back of this, there's Alexander Payne's involved in this screenplay, and there is an interesting, you know, screenplay, perhaps, in two guys, you know, pretending to be gay in order to. But no, they're not interested in that at all. What they're interested in is pulling out a whole bunch of stereotypes, you know, mincing queens and all that sort of stuff. But it's okay, because we're on their side. And doing the, okay, yeah, well, we're going to pretend to be gay because that's great. But we're not. We're incredibly heterosexual, really. Really, I want to be running after cheerleaders. That's what I want to be doing. Hey, I'm Adam Sandler, drinking beer. Blah, I can't do it. Blah, blah, blah. No kissing. None of that. Oh, no, no. Let's stay away from all that kind of possibility.
You're getting more camp, by the way.
Well, I'm sorry, because it's so duplicitous. And at one point, they actually say, hey, you know, let's not let this split the fire department because we lost a lot of people already. They're even invoking the tragedies of 9/11 to sort of somehow morally hoik you into liking the film. And you go, no, don't like it. It's duplicitous. It's not funny. It's badly written. Adam Sandler isn't funny. He's scary. He's creepy. That's why he's so good in Punch Drunk Love, because he's like Anthony Hopkins. He's like Anthony Perkins, actually. I mean, he's not like Hannibal Lecter. He's like Norman Bates. You know, it's like he's really sort of, there's something loose in his head. It's not funny at all. And to have this wrapped up in this kind of, oh, actually, you know, it's a thing, it'll appeal to the guys. And there's a bit when Adam Sandler, you know, punches out a guy who's, you know, anti-gay and all that kind of stuff. And in the end, they end up doing an AIDS benefit and all that stuff. It's like, no, 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 no. Plus, the great big payoff thing in which all the fire department stand behind them, the fire department all say, I'm gay, is a rip-off of a scene from a movie called In and Out with Kevin Kline. Do you remember that? Everyone gets up and does the I'm gay at the town hall, which is actually a reference to Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus, I'm gay. Well, In and Out was funnier, and it was 10 years ago. That film was 1997. So you're making plus, not to even begin to point out that it goes back to a, you know, tradition, which is some like it hot and way beyond. When you think of all the things you could have done with this idea, it's just depressing to see how few of them they've done. And it really is quite toe-curling to see just how much they want to reassure you on the way in, on the way out, and at every possible opportunity, they're not really gay.
I think we got that. John, on this email, back to the movie translation, Simon and the Good Doctor, I gather that Dr. No translated into Chinese as, we don't need a doctor. Now,
that can't be right.
Well, that sounds as though it is right, doesn't it? Because You could just imagine. Let's go and see the new Bond film. It's called We Don't Need a Doctor. Apparently that's true. John Soper, thank you, Mayo at bbc.co.uk. 3 minutes to...
I do Clubland.
I think we should do Clubland, because Brenda Blethyn was on the programme yesterday.
Okay, we won't bother with the clips. We're not going to have time. Clubland and...
We could just act it out.
You mean, I did do Brenda Blethyn. Sweetie, darling, darling, sweetheart, darling, sweetheart, sweetie, darling. There we go. But, you know, but Brenda Blethyn. An Australian movie that in Australia is called Introducing the Dwights, apparently. And the story is Brenda...
That doesn't work.
No, it doesn't at all. But there we go. It fits very nicely in with the movie translation thing. Introducing
the
Dwights.
They speak the same language.
No, I know, but it's probably because it just they thought that... I mean, Introducing the... Would you go and see a film called Introducing the Dwights? No. It sounds like Meet the Freedmans. I mean, it's like you're not going to go and see
that.
Yeah, but in a much darker and a horrible, you know, messed up family kind of way. Anyway, Brenda Blethyn is the matriarch, living on her own. She is a washed up nightclub act who's desperately trying to sort of relive her past glories and become a stand up comedian of some renown again, whilst raising her two sons, one of whom has some learning difficulties, the other of whom is just on the brink of discovering girls and maybe on the point of moving out. And dominating the whole thing is this kind of overbearing mother, played by Brenda Blethyn, actually not unlike the character that she plays in Little Voice. I mean, very sort of, you know, big and brassy and shrieky and difficult to get on with and all that sort of stuff. Now, it's very interesting. Playing a comedian in a movie is very, very hard to do. There are very few people who've pulled it off convincingly. I was trying to make a list, and I basically came up with Robert De Niro as Rupert Pupkin in King of Comedy. There's a thing called Stand Up with Tom Hanks and Sally Field, which is quite interesting. And then, of course, there's like The Entertainer, you know, it's Laurence Olivier. And because actually to capture the sort of the horror, the darkness, the horrible side of comedy is very, very hard. Now, apparently Brenda Blethyn's comedy routines that she does in this film were co-written with Joe Brand, who I like very much, think she's a great comedian, really think she's funny. And the Brenda Blethyn routines aren't funny at all, but worse, they're not delivered as convincingly as... I don't think it's because she's a bad actress. I think Brenda Blethyn is a good actress.
But isn't she supposed to be a comedian who's not very...
She
good?
She is, but she doesn't play a comedian who's not very good convincingly. And that's exactly what De Niro does as Rupert Pupkin. Apart from that, there's a nice little coming-of-age movie going on around the edge of it, but it's sort of jammed together with the Brenda Blethyn character, doesn't quite work, and it ends up with Brenda Blethyn singing Nutbush City Limits, which is one of those moments where you just think she's not actually going to do this. Oh, she is. And it's like the Susan Sarandon tap-dancing thing in Elizabethtown. You think, I admire the chutzpah. Not sure I would have
left
it in the
film. She
loved
doing it, though.
I'm sure she did. And I like Brenda Blethyn, don't get me wrong. But I think the part isn't written well enough. And I think she doesn't convince as a bad nightclub comedian. And I'm sorry, that kind of undermines the venture somewhat. We have 25 seconds left and you're looking at me like a... Okay.
Like what?
No, you're looking at me with that kind of like carry on as long as you want. But I know that any minute now another programme's going to start.
That's very true. And it's driving. It's very good. Movie of the week.
Well, it's A Mighty Heart, clearly.
Well, is it? I haven't seen it.
No, it is. I mean, what else was I positive about?
If you say so, that's absolutely fine by us. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. We're back on Monday at 1 o'clock.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.